Hello, 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 and welcome to the Velvet Studio, home of Ottawa's Queer Media, and we are coming at you with a drag special today. I thought I'd switch up the theme tune there just a little bit with, RuPaul's The Beginning, just a little snippet of that.
You're getting all fancy there.
I did,
showing off
music transition.
Skills.
Wow, that's some next level stuff right there.
Trying to impress some producer somewhere, perhaps.
Yeah. I'm trying to impress the listeners. Obviously, I strive to improve so that the listeners have the greatest of quality. Anyway, I digress because we have some fabulous guests in the room with us tonight. For the sake of the listeners, my name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
Crystal Caring.
And Angus Wright.
Now, Angus, you have been a co-host here on the show a number of times. Actually, I think one of the last times was talking about drag. Now, we are talking about the history and the cultural impact of drag.
Specifically?
Yeah, well, I mean...
Specifically in Canada is what I'm trying to get
at. I don't know, because I...
Or especially in Canada.
As some of you may know, I'm a foreigner, as my partner Jake likes to call me, a foreigner. And as a foreigner, I did not grow up with a Canadian drag scene. I grew up with Lily Savage, who was on Blankety Blank.
Mm-hmm. Dame Edna.
Dame Edna, of course, the most famous Australian drag queen ever. Mm-hmm.
Who was even before RuPaul.
Yeah.
We need to point that out. Like, RuPaul hit in the 90s.
Yeah.
And she was definitely, Dame Edna was there way before that. I think Dame Edna actually dates back to the 50s.
She's been going a long time, that is for sure.
Well, I think that was originally her first appearance on TV, I think was in the 50s.
I think it's actually because of Dame Edna that my grandmother used to pronounce it Gladiola.
That reminds me.
Actually, and also the tree is a magnolia.
There's a great clip here of Dame Edna interviewing Katie Lang.
In translation, Ivana, it does. I accept you.
I got it. Okay.
I accept you I'm as a gorgeous soft. Canadian.
Now, actually, this interview with Dame Edna and Katie Lang also has Ivana Trump in it.
Oh, man. Kind of appropriate with what's going on now.
I know.
Exactly. I would like to hear her take
on
what's going on right now.
Katie Lang or Dame Edna?
No, both. Ivanka.
Ivanka.
Ivana.
All three.
Because Ivanka's the daughter. Ivana was the wife.
Ivana Trump.
The original wife.
She dodged a bullet.
One of many.
Oh my God, I feel sorry for her.
Oh my
God. Anyway, we're not supposed to be talking about this stuff. We're not supposed to be doing political.
No, ain't got no time for that.
Let's go back to Dame Edna. And Katie Lang, I think that was probably around Katie Lang's Mac makeup.
It was June 2007 was this interview, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually more recent.
The Dame Edna treatment.
I would have guessed early 2000s.
Sorry, familiar co-host Brendan with the filibuster caught whiff of the conversation about cult politics and was drawn in like a dog to a bone. So
that's a bone you don't want to have. Yvonne was smart to get rid of that one.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. Now, for me, when I think of drag, I think of the comedy of it. And I think of, you know, essentially.
Well, also because of Christmas in England.
Yes, Panto. He's behind you. Actually, Lily Savage or Graham Norton. Grady.
Before you go on, can you explain to the audience what the pantomime is? Because we don't have a history of pantomime in Canada.
This is so funny. This is.
Don't play a clip. Just explain it with your mouth.
See, now you're making me actually not play a clip, even though I found one. You're the worst.
Well, explain it first, and then...
Pantomime is like an interactive theatre, and it's really, really popular over Christmas. A lot of people do pantomimes in little towns and villages. Mm-hmm. The BBC, on a number of occasions, have actually broadcast pantomimes on like main time TV. We're talking 11, 12 million viewers, because it's such a cultural institution. Now, in Canada, that are pantos, and I strongly recommend that you go and check them out. I saw a local one out in Belleville, Ontario, tiny little affair, and you know, so gay men are notoriously the ugly stepsisters or the evil witch, or you know, the evil female characters are usually men in drag. And there's a long history to that. And Lily Savage went into retirement. Actually, Paul O'Grady said that she's gone to work for one of the Swiss banks and can be seen at the airport with bags of cash. Anyway,
But it's also worth noting that in England, pantos are so incredibly large. And it's such a phenomenon that a lot of celebrities enjoy taking the time off to do them. So you'll get things like Daniel Radcliffe playing a waiter with no lines in a panto in a small village, just so that when he walks out with a tray of oysters, the audience freaks out.
They lose their pajamas. Yeah. Absolutely. So this is a quick sample of Lily Savage.
Tee off me, twanky.
Whoops.
That was a very quick clip.
Yeah, very quick clip. I don't know why. It
went to something else.
So Lily Savage is from Liverpool. And it's that Scouse accent, and you know, it's a for drag, for the sake of our audience, is the performance of gender.
So would Mado in Montreal be an example of?
I don't know Mado well enough, so let's ask
Mado.
Mado. Oh, I'm Mado. So sorry.
Yeah. So, Crystal, are you familiar with Mado in Montreal? So,
we actually were just having this discussion. My opinion of Mado is not the highest, because I found she stepped in too politically, and she doesn't like English-speaking queens. She doesn't have anything to do with the English-speaking community. She's actually stood up Toronto Pride on more than one occasion, and I don't know enough about her. I mean, you have to give her props. She's been around for 30 years. Yeah. The Club Meadow has been around since 2002, so almost 15 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, she's done a lot for that drag. And I mean, Quebec drag is more of a clown drag than what we do.
It's much more comedic in nature.
Well, and even in their makeup and stuff, it's more of a clown. It's more of a painted clown look.
But in terms of panto,
it looks more like Australian drag. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like like Australian drag from the neck up, and then from the neck down, it's like rough drag.
Yeah, because a lot of the time they don't wear boobs, and they don't.
Or they do have boobs, but no bra, so they're like swinging down by their waist.
It's for comedy.
Yeah.
So let's, for the sake, because you cut me off when I was hoping to define drag, because there's some listeners who may not know what the heck we're talking about.
Well, but I look at drag as more of an entertainment.
Yeah, it's the performance of gender. And we might talk about female impersonation when we get to Russell Crowe. Is it Russell Crowe?
No, Russell Crowe is an actor. Craig Russell, but thank you for coming out.
Close enough.
Craig Russell.
When we get to Craig Russell, we'll talk about female impersonation. Yes. But for the sake of the audience, drag is the performance of gender, usually by gay men, but not exclusively.
Mm-hmm. We have the drag kings as well,
which is usually performed by, I think, straight women in the majority, which is quite interesting.
The Canadian troupe here is actually mostly lesbian or trans. Mm.
The Capital Kings?
Yeah, the Capital Kings. Yeah. I love them. They're awesome. They've been a part of quite a few of my shows.
And they've performed all over the country, so keep an eye out. And a lot of drag performers usually performs in bars and clubs, so wherever you are listening to this, there's usually someone nearby that will have it. Now, Crystal, you actually avoid that scene, and I think it's worth delving slightly into that, because this speaks to another element, an almost unspoken element of the drag culture in Canada.
I was going to say it would be more for, I mean, I'm looking at more as the Ottawa drag scene, which kind of has evolved with the RuPaul's Drag Race. I find it's a fairly catty affair now. Everyone has to belong to the house of someone. You all have to look a certain way. You all have to do the top 10 songs. You all have to. And I really look at it as it's more than that. I perform a lot with Zelda Marshall, and we get along so well because we're both so different. She does a lot of the rocker chick drag, whereas I'm known as the Vegas glam. I love, well, you can see right today. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love all the rhinestones.
You've got kind of a Houston look to you right now. Well,
I usually do Dolly and Mae West.
Yeah.
Nice.
We're Liberace and Joan Rivers had a child, that'd be me.
If you're wondering what Crystal's wearing today, go to our Facebook. Just look for Velvet Studio on Facebook, and you will be able to see Crystal.
And this is a minor daytime drag.
With a mic. Yeah, this is
minor daytime drag.
Carlton realness.
Yes, exactly.
I find it interesting, actually, to think about, and I'm really curious about how drag is going to evolve again, just given what we're knowing about the trans community, and because I think historically a lot of historical queens have been more transgendered than strictly gay men who are performing.
Yeah, they're definitely moving in another. I know a lot of queens who started out doing drag who are now fully transitioned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, although, I mean, in the States, it's one of those things, too. In the States, you have to look at, it's fairly common down there for a lot of the queens to have breast implants and stuff,
mm-hmm.
which is something you don't get up here in Canada that often.
Well, and I know even, like, I know even some of the queens just see those kind of implants as, like, temporary things, like, that they do while they're in the height of their career, and then with the plan that they'll just sort of have them removed later in life when they're not performing.
Although I think most of them tend to continue. I know, like, Frank Marino from Las Vegas.
Right.
Same idea. Like, he's been around forever, and I don't, from what I've seen, I don't think he plans on retiring anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lot of the queens do have the work done, especially in the States. They have the work done. Not so much up here. I think here as well, the scene, well, especially here in Ottawa, the scene does not pay. And we don't have tipping in Ottawa.
We don't have the same culture.
Which tipping and stuff is a very, very important part. And that's one of the reasons, too, why I stay away from the clubs here, is there's no pay and no one's stepping up to try to fight for it. All the queens are willing to step over each other for a free show, even.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs a lot of money to look this cheap. You know that.
Exactly. So where do you perform primarily?
I actually do most of my shows are through Algonquin College now. We do Perth, Pembroke, and here. And then we do St. Lawrence College through Brockville and Carleton Place. So we do travel around and do a lot of shows, but they're all through the college at this point.
Cool. And is it like the pubs kind of
our,
thing?
Well, our biggest thing is we do Dirty Bingo. And yes, they usually do host it in the pubs. And we're there the first Wednesday of our, I'm going to do a self-plug.
Yeah.
We're there the first Wednesday of every month for the whole school year. And in Pembroke, we're there the first Friday of every month. And in Perth, we are there four times. Coming up November the 8th, we'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always on the road and heading places. And it's really neat and interesting to see in the smaller communities.
It seems a little bit more like what I understand of how drag is usually done in Britain, where it's less of a bar thing and it's more of a... well, I mean, it would be a bar thing, but like a pub thing and less of a dance club thing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So Vauxhall House, in the most famous gay pub in Soho, the Vauxhall Club or Vauxhall Bar, I forget which one it is. But the Vauxhall, that's where Lily Savage did, the first, that's how she kind of made her name before getting on the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
It's the pub performances. It's exactly what you're doing. Dirty Bingo's or Drag Bingo is huge in Britain.
Yeah.
We sell out. They tell us we're the fastest selling show at Algonquin. We sell out within an hour, 300 tickets.
And that style, the pub style of drag, is less about the costumes and the makeup and the music and more about interacting with the audience. It's more
don't
of
say
a,
that.
Well, no. I mean,
I'm definitely all about the costumes.
Without the costumes and the makeup, you're not doing drag. But I mean, what makes that style distinct is that, like, if you're not quick on your heels, and if you're not a fast talker, if you're not a fast thinker, you're not a good drag queen.
Exactly. Yes, you have to be quick.
Now,
and it's our show is basically me for 2 hours with a microphone,
just riffing.
Yeah, it's 2 hours, and I'm in the audience, so it's not like you're on a stage and you have a certain act.
Yeah.
It's you're in the audience, and if someone says something to you, or if you were in the audience and you made a quick quote,
yeah,
I have to be able to come back from that. I have to be able to quickly say something mm-hmm. and keep the show moving along. So yeah, you have to be fast on your feet mm-hmm. and be thinking all times.
And that's much more in line with the drag that I'm familiar yeah. with in Britain. But we'll talk about...
And hecklers are the best.
Oh, yes.
Because when people heckle you, that gives you like a good 5 to 10 minutes of something to talk about.
But you also have to keep in mind, even with hecklers, you still have to be thinking because you need to bring the show back to you.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
And back to what it is, the comedy. Because it depends on what kind of heckler we're talking about.
If
it was something that's just kind of amusing. But if they're actually trying to take a stab at you, mm-hmm. you have to, A, be able to stand up for yourself quickly. Mm-hmm. But then you have to move it back to the show without... You don't want the audience sympathy to go to that person and be like, now the performance is just mean.
Yeah.
So you can't be mean. You have to be...
And not to take it back to the U.S., but right now I know a lot of queer...
Bianca Del Rio?
Well, no, just in general, queer performers are under attack. I know in the improv and stand-up community, for example... The hecklers are actually like attacking the artists, and the artists are like walking away from the gigs because.
I think a lot
dangerous.
Of that is due with the whole Trump thing right
exactly
now.
Exactly right. Yeah.
It's such a political unrest
now,
down there.
Now we're gonna cut the Trump talk short, and I'm gonna bring it back to the show. As you mentioned, we're gonna jump to RuPaul CC That Walk, one of the biggest songs from a drag artist, and actually at the end of the day, we'll be wrapping up with a huge Canadian song. By a drag artist, and we'll be back just after this. I know you want to.
Want to say, don't forget, RuPaul was huge in the 90s with Supermodel, was some of the first hits.
Absolutely. I mean, I had to pick one randomly, and this is what we ended. Anyway, this is RuPaul's Sissy That Walk, and we'll be back just after this.
That wow. That wow. That wow.
Hello and welcome back. We are having a ball, and I say that with purpose, talking about drag culture.
We actually have a complaint, Luke.
What?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a great discussion during the commercial break.
This is an episode on the history of drag, and you played a recent piece by RuPaul instead of
The last song
who is the
by
first
Jackie
major
Shane
drag
from
queen
the
to get
50s, okay? I mean, I've gone old school at the end, okay?
But Divine.
Also, that song had a swear in it.
It did. I wanted to apologize to folks for the
and I don't
wanna
be like
name
very
of a female dog at the height of, at I, the top of the show.
Sorry, so. I have to defend you there, Luke. I don't want to be very like this side of the glass, that side of the glass, but that song we've also played on a previous drag episode. So
also, we got a listener message me saying they were having a ball to that song, and I say ball with purpose again,
like just the one.
Because as the queens, we have to hide those. Thanks.
It's true. Actually, the Try Guys Try Drag really does a very funny way of looking into that. Anyway, but I want to talk about black ball culture and how that intersects with drag. Because when we talk about cultural influences,
that's culture within the African American community, not absolutely the culture of black balls.
Well, see, yeah. I would have to say, I don't know a lot about. I only know from Paris is Burning. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I know really about it. I don't know a lot about that. I know it's harder for a lot of black drag queens as well.
Yeah.
Especially getting into the scene and getting recognition. Mm-hmm. And
until maybe, I think it was about 10 years ago where ball culture started to pick up in Toronto. But historically, it hasn't been major in Canada.
But it's still not very mainstream.
No.
Like most people don't know about it.
It's not by invitation only, but it may as well be, because you need to know someone who knows someone who's running the party. But they don't mind that because they can only afford spaces that are only so large, and they tend to have to turn away people at the door anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when we look at the history of Stonewall and just in gay rights in general, and we look at, you know, it was a queen that threw the first brick type thing, and mm-hmm. and we look at the culture of the black ball scene. I mean, they're both born of the same thing. Like these were people that were going to Stonewall for a safe space in order to indulge in what they wanted to indulge in, which was dressing up as women. I feel like drag as a performance comes, like it stems from sort of, I think it grew out of a place of there was more of it, and so then it became more of an entertainment thing. But I think also with the black ball scene, it's there to address a need within that community to have space to be able to live their life that way.
I think we should probably be clear to the audience. Like, we need to define what we're talking about.
Because I was going to say, I would on those lines, I would also say, like, drag in that situation, especially if you look from today's point, thank God, because it was men doing the effeminate who were the ones who pushed the boundaries and pushed the political situation to open up and say, you know, this is who we are. Because I find now, I guess it's kind of turning back around again, but for quite a while there, it was, oh, we don't want no femmes, we don't want no drag queens, we don't want you to represent us,
I don't even know that it's turning around. I mean, I feel like we have segments of our community in general that are targets and punching bags even from within the community. So
very much, yes.
Yeah, so I feel
I've
like
actually had letters written about me as well. Because when I do my comedy, I will take a shot at anyone in the audience. And I don't care, straight, gay, whatever. It doesn't matter. If you're there, you're there for a night of comedy, and we're there to have fun. And I've had people say, oh, well, you can't make fun of a lesbian or whatever. And I'm like, no, I have to make fun of everyone. You can't just say, okay, well, I'll exclude you, because then you're changing that.
Yeah.
You're making it, then you are kind of making it sexist, or
you don't want to make audience members invisible.
Yeah, you want to draw everyone, and you're trying to get everyone.
Now, I'm glad that we've very briefly touched on black ball culture and how it's influenced and interchanged with drag. I want to bring it to Canada, because a lot of drag is influenced by the States, and we will talk probably about the biggest modern influence, which is RuPaul, in just a bit. Mm-hmm. But before we get there, let's talk about Canadian drag culture. And I think that, and if you were here for our rant a couple of weeks ago, Canadian Queer History episode, it's on the website, www.velvetstudio.ca. Me and you went on for a while about how Canadian Queer History is erased or ignored, and I think we need to talk about Canadian drag culture. Like, mm-hmm. where does it come from? Who were the pioneers? What how did that shape up to what it is today?
I would say it's fairly similar. I mean, we were saying earlier about Michelle Dewberry, who's one of the longest performing queens. She was last year in the Guinness Book of World Records as the world's longest, oldest drag queen.
That's right.
But it was disputed, and in 2016, they named a U.S. Drag queen as having one more year on her. So I think, I mean, as far as the drag scene in Ottawa... And, well, I mean, and in Canada, we had Craig Russell was really huge in the 70s and 80s and was kind of our Canadian version of RuPaul, who kind of got that mainstream success, toured literally all over the world.
And then in the 50s and 60s, there was that the performer from Toronto whose music we're going to play
later.
Jackie Shane. Who was based out of not Church Street, because Church Street as it is now hadn't really developed yet. So she was on Yonge Street on some of the clubs there. And then in the 90s and early 2000s, you had the B-Girls. And something that all of these performers had in common is that they would actually sing. Very few of them lip sync, and if they did lip sync, it was usually to make fun of other drag queens. But some of them even wrote and performed their own songs.
Yes.
And the B-Girls actually had an entire comedy routine. They made mini musicals, and they would put on like two of them a year, and they were really crap. But that was part of the joy of it.
But at the time of them, that was when Queer as Folk was really huge here in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I remember the B-Girls actually got signed
on Showcase
to do specific commercials during the Queer as Folk height with them. That was a big thing at the time, too.
And there's a whole sequence where they got the B-Girls to imitate scenes from famous movies. And
Yes.
So I'm like 100 years old. So I remember way back in... Let me take you back to yesteryear. So
back in my day.
Is awesome.
When I moved here, and I always forget the name of the bar, but it was underneath the Rideau Center. It was in the parking lot of the Rideau Center. You guys know? Nobody?
Nope.
No.
Okay, so I am 100.
It sounds completely racy.
Well, it was amazing. Oh, my gosh. I wish I could remember the name of it. But it was where...
This is where Google's good.
Where we went to see drag queens. And, so you'd enter this bar through the parking garage of the Rideau Center. And then you'd go downstairs and it was kind of underneath. And it was... a lot of lesbians went there. It was kind of known as a lesbian hangout.
So the Lookout took over for it.
Well, yeah, now they've all shifted over. They closed the garage, I guess, but
actually, isn't that the name of it? The Garage?
It was no.
That was a club here a long, long, long time ago.
It was like I want to say like. No, it wasn't. I'll figure it out and I'll totally tweet it or something.
Yes, message me later.
But it was
now.
Amazing. And I remember going there and the first drag queen I had seen, I wish I could remember her name, but she was 100 at that time. So she's like probably 150 now.
I was going to say Dixie, but no.
No, this was
I'm not going to get in trouble. No. I love Dixie.
But it was her retirement party, actually. And I remember her doing The Wind Beneath My Wings and...
Star. Her last name was Star. I know who you're talking about. I was at her final show.
But was it
was at Icon.
No, it's not. Well, I'm trying.
She came back and did one number. She had retired and she came back. Oh. Star was her last name.
I'm just giving half info here, but yeah. So but Ottawa scene is to me has always been very quiet, very small. I mean, I find Ottawa in general, we're not supportive of our community establishments, but we tend to kind of go and party in other cities. But no, there's always been pockets of
we've done whole episodes on that very issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, and it's. But I mean, it's hard here in Ottawa, especially for the queens. That's why I said I don't do the clubs anymore because they won't pay. They don't. Mm-hmm. And when you are there doing the numbers and stuff, they don't care.
Yeah.
They don't look at you. They don't listen.
With regards to the history of drag in Canada,
yeah.
A lot of it was Actually, I've met quite a few who emphasize that what they were doing was not drag; they were doing female impersonation, which is sort of a it's you could either think of it as a branch or something related but not identical. There's a whole bunch of different ways of looking at it, but female impersonators don't have that over the top drag look. A lot of them try very hard to convincingly look like women. A lot of them perform; they do their own voices, they do their own songs. They tend to wear clothes they can actually dance in, because if they're going to do the full Janet Jackson. So I don't like what I mean by that is Janet Jackson, at least before she got pregnant, was known for singing and dancing and not lip syncing, because she was like, you know, you're here to see what you see. And the first song is going to be amazing. And as the night goes on, she gets more tired and out of breath. The singing's no good, but that's part of the joy of Janet Jackson. It's all authentic.
Right.
And that's what a lot of the female impersonators were like. It was 100%. That is who they were. Singing and dancing, sometimes doing their own songs, but not very often. Usually they would pick an act. Like they would, you know, I am doing Judy Garland, or am...
Some of them are quite iconic, like Mae West, for example.
Well, when I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
I mean, with iconic lines like that, I mean, you can't go wrong with a Mae West.
Mae West also coined the phrase, is that a pencil in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
Yes. Mae West was huge. I mean, it was also rumored way back, like 30s and 40s, that she herself was a drag queen. Yeah.
She wrote a play that was simply called Sex. That was,
and she went to jail for that.
It was shut down and raided before the first act was over on opening night. So,
and there was drag queens in that.
Yes.
She actually had gay men in that and drag queens. And yes, and it was shut down and raided that on the first night.
I have a transcript at home.
That's awesome. I love Mae West. I know a lot of the older culture. And I mean, but, and that's the same thing. I've met a lot of the queens in Toronto. I do photography on the side as well. Mm-hmm. And I have shot a few pageants in Toronto. And when I was doing it, there was the church on Church Street is where they were holding the year-end pageant.
There's like a million. That's why it's called Church Street.
Yeah. but upstairs, there was this really old drag queen. And she was just sitting up there, and I could see her in the shadows. And I asked her, I'm like, is there any chance that I could get up in that balcony and meet this person?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remember her name now. And it was Madame something. And she was amazing. And she had told me then, I said, how would you sum up your life? She said, well, I was very lucky. I got to do this in a time when it was illegal. Mm. But I also got to meet some of the people that I performed as. And she had met Pearl Bailey and Mae West. And she had met a lot of these people and had dinner with them. And actually became friendly with them. So whenever they came to Toronto to do their shows, they would actually invite her out to dinner and talk to her.
The only modern person I've heard of that's anything like that is Britney Spears, who occasionally would disguise herself and go to local gay bars and watch queens performing her in the early 2000s.
You say that, but there
and
was
Adele.
A huge, huge
oh,
thing.
Oh, yeah, Adele does that, too.
Graham Norton did the skit with the BBC with Adele, and Adele dressed up as an Adele drag queen.
Madame, yes, I love that. Her name was Madame Goodwill.
Oh,
I've heard that name.
Yes, that was her name from Toronto, Madame Goodwill. She was amazing to me, and to get to hear her stories.
But the relationship
from that time
between the queens and the acts that they're performing is kind of, I don't want to say it's degrading. It's just less common than it used to be. But I think that's also an extension of the fact that now people are performing songs instead of performing whole characters.
Mm. And Adele is hilarious.
Oh yeah,
not to like, you know. You know, make you all feel bad, but I managed to go and see Adele when in those tickets that sold out 15 minutes. And there was a story where somebody had complained that she spent too much time talking.
What?
And you're right, you could probably have got like 10 more songs out of her.
No, you go to see the live show to get the jibber jabber,
and she is just so gosh damn funny.
And when I went to see Radiohead, Tom York said nothing except "Konbawa." I saw Radiohead when I was in Japan, and that's no jibber jabber. Just.
But
good
is that
evening.
Because he was in Japan? Because I know
that's a normal Radiohead concert.
Okay,
because
I was going to say I know there they tend to like their performers to just.
I do not generally like live albums, but I love Jan Arden live albums because, first of all, her performances are way better live. She's not a studio artist; she's a live artist. And the second thing is the jibber jabber. She's hilarious.
Yes,
Cher also. hilarious.
Yes, Cher is known for the jibber jabber as well.
Bette Midler is one of the main ones who kind of started that, where it was, don't just go into your songs.
Yeah,
give a little joke. Give
but
a little
also
routine.
Bear in mind where Bette Midler began. So Bette Midler
in the Continental Bath with the drag queen.
She was she's sort of like a female drag queen. She's one of the first big names of someone a natural bio female basically doing a drag act of herself. And she started off in a gay bathhouse, bearing in mind that the New York City bathhouse scene at the time, you had like a bar in the front, and then you had, you know, the usual dark rooms in the back. And then sometimes you would have actual bathhouse rooms where you would go and you would like the lights were on and you could actually just sit in a sauna and people would be like, no, put your towel back on. The sauna next door is for that. And then some of them would serve food and they would have live performers. Tori Amos also started off in a bathhouse like this. But yeah, Bette Midler, she was known for just like stopping the band and getting everyone to be quiet because she could hear people orgasming in the back. And she'd be like, everyone, listen to that. You wish you were those people, don't you? Go back and join them. You know you want to. And she would just do that. And so
I'll just make a note too. Well, I mean, just to bring it back to what I was saying earlier, it's the bar's called Coral Reef Club. And, it started in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And the star that you're referring to is Brenda Starr.
That's it, Brenda Starr. Yes, I saw her. She was an icon for one night. They did she had retired and they brought her on stage and she did one number. She was amazing. She's still around. She's still around Ottawa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would say, and going back to the period you're talking about in the 70s, I mean, we have to talk about Divine.
Oh, yes.
You and I have already been doing that during all the commercial breaks.
Let's keep the Divine convo short. Just look at the impact, because we're trying to keep it Canadian.
We've also done a Divine episode.
We did do a Divine episode. I think all our episodes are in some way Divine, but that particular one was very much so.
Well, I think we could also talk about Craig Russell, too, because he was 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And very... Like I said, went so mainstream. He was the original mainstream. Him and Divine, like Craig Russell came through here, but also kind of became huge in Europe.
Yeah,
and then did the movie in 77, did Outrageous.
Yeah,
and that catapulted to even greater success.
It's actually really good watching Outrageous, if anything else, because the first half hour of the movie is filmed in Toronto, and it looks identical. Even to the fact that three quarters of the city is covered in scaffolding and they have to walk on the road because the sidewalks are covered in scaffolding. It was when I watched it, I was like, I was living in Toronto when I first saw it. Anyway, it's actually very interesting to compare Craig Russell and Divine, because Divine kind of popularized the campy trash garbage
outrageous
drag.
Yeah,
and then Craig Russell kind of did more of like a dignity and poise kind
of. Well he did characters. Craig
Russell
was started out with Mae West as her assistant and then started doing her in his act, and she actually helped him, and a couple of his costumes are actually given to him from her.
Ooh.
Wow.
And then he did Tallulah Bankhead, who was a major person who movie actress who kind of became known when the talkies happened. And so he kind of, and he did Betty Davis, and he did, you know, he did all of them, but because he did a show that was known as Craig Russell and His Ladies. They even have a book of it at home where they took and went through and did photos of all of his different characters, and he would do, you know, 13 people a night.
Yeah.
And it would be one right after the other. He literally had a little screen on the side of the stage that he would step behind, drop the dress, and he would talk. They had a microphone set up, and he would talk as he dropped the dress, pulled the wig off, put the other wig on, pulled on the other dress, and then ran back on stage as the next character and continued on. And he would do 12, 13 people a night. You can find him on YouTube. I was saying that earlier to Sebastian.
We did find the link, but the audio quality is
You can actually find a lot of his concerts that had been filmed for TV back then are actually on YouTube.
Yep. They're not very radio friendly in the sense that there's a lot of physical action going on, a lot of performing.
Well, because you have to see, when he does Betty Davis, he does the mannerisms, he has the cigarette, so if you play it on radio, it's not, you're not going to get
some things a lot. Just for the sake of our listeners as well, Crystal is here in full drag, which it was funny. You were asking me, do you want to come in drag? I'm like, well, I mean, it's radio. I mean,
you said get your blank in gear and get here.
I did, yeah.
And I showed. I did what I'm supposed to do.
But when you're not in drag, are you still Crystal?
No.
Exactly.
Most people say that I'm nothing like what she is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's I mean, I always say to people, that's because I'm paid to do this. I can't just walk around the streets saying crap to people. Almost said the wrong word.
Now, we're going to fast forward in just a few moments and look at the huge, monumental impact that RuPaul has had and how that's changed the Canadian scene.
Well, and I mean, the impact has been a long time coming because
yeah.
You have to remember, RuPaul was huge in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. But I find it funny from what he did then to what he's doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very different.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that just after this. This is one of the only modern drag songs without swearing in it. I really struggled to find one. And it's Jake Monsoon's Everybody's Girl. And I think the reason I chose this is because it's a funny song. And a lot of drag queens do funny songs. Mm-hmm. Check it out. It's a lot of fun. We'll be back just after this.
Ready for dating someone steady. I'm everybody's girl. On Sunday night it's Danny, on Monday maybe Manny. I'm everybody's girl. There's a point to my behavior. Be a cowhand's girl. La 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 la. And you wanna know why? I just can't keep my calves together. Everybody's girl. Some old Greek called Aristotle. I'm in the yellow pages. I'm girl, you won't be disappointed. I'm also double jointed. Everybody's girl. Though it leaves a lot of fellas cursing.
Hello and welcome back. I cut that short because we're having such a great conversation. But I love how, and this song and a lot of drag performances really rely on double entendre, and it speaks to the legacy of Mae West and so on and so forth. I mean, it shows that drag has evolved and learned in the process.
Well, we were also talking about some of the other ones that have come from porn and stuff as well, like Shishi LaRue, who was huge, who started out in the... late
huge
80s,
in terms of
90s.
Popularity.
Yeah, no, well, and in size. But I mean, we're talking about how, you know, it was always kind of an outer fringes. It was never nothing was ever really mainstream with drag. It's just kind of become more mainstream now with the RuPaul's Drag Race and stuff like that.
Emmy Award winning. We had a conversation actually in the lift on the way up, and we were talking about how I live for the comedy of drag. I think it's hilarious. It's entertainment. What really disappoints me and what has kind of limited my drive to go see drag in Ottawa and Toronto and Montreal is that it's a lot of people
being
lip-syncing. No, it's just lip-syncing.
But that was a large part of it for a long time, is that most drag queens did lip-sync and do lip-sync. But I think the biggest problem I have now, and we were saying with the RuPaul's Drag Race, is that everything has to be, you need to do the top 10, you need to be thin, you need to do your makeup a certain way, you need to be a certain age, you need to be, whereas I look at it and say, why don't we have everything for everyone?
Mm-hmm. Now, drag kings are cracking open that nut, and they're really mixing it up. Some of the best and most hilarious performance I've seen is from drag kings. And they're just so much fun, and they don't go by that rule book, and they've reinvented the wheel, which is just hilarious. But you know, you've been an avid RuPaul's fan for a long time now. How big a role does lip syncing play? Because it's had a huge impact.
So I come from I guess I'm a bit of a hippie when it comes to drag, in the sense that to me there can be more than one person at the party. It's like a big buffet. You have all kinds. And when it comes to RuPaul, like RuPaul actually before to what Crystal was saying, like she did make it big in the 90s with that Supermodel of the World album. But prior to that, Rue had started as in a punk band and was just sort of doing gender bending, and then that evolved into the New York club scene. And a lot of that's actually documented. I think I've talked about it before with Nelson Sullivan. He was a guy. It's who World of Wonder is named after. That's the production company now that does a lot of the RuPaul stuff. But so Nelson used to just film the New York scene, and you like there are so many videos of RuPaul this early star booty, and it was just sort of more gender bending,
it was the just the Glamazon scene. Took off for him. That was when he hit mainstream success, was with the Glamazon.
But it's funny because
persona.
RuPaul's message, like when you watch RuPaul's Drag Race now and the messages that you hear throughout that, and then you look at some of these videos, like especially back in Wigstock, like when Lady Bunny used to put on Wigstock every year in the 80s, and RuPaul was performing there, and it was sort of when the album was just, the Supermodel of the World album was
taking
just
off
on the fringes. And the message is the exact same as today. So it's really, like, I find RuPaul is kind of like a bit of a beacon, in the sense that Ru has been very consistent with the message that you just do you. Like, as long as, and I find that people who are performing, even with drag, the ones who are the best, in my opinion, are the ones who are doing it for themselves. Like, you can tell that they are living their life, like, to the fullest in their performance.
To get out there and have fun and enjoy yourself. That's why I love... Never leave a rhinestone unturned. I love all of it. You know, Liberace on acid is what I always say. That's kind of what my act is. But that's, I love the glam. I love the jewelry. I love that excitement of it, and to be out there and having fun and letting the audience enjoy it with you. Whereas that's what I was saying earlier, like a lot of the queens now tend to, you have to be this certain mold, you have to be one thing, and I don't think that's really fair. I like to see, like, if you go to club, see a rock and roll number, see a country number, see a Broadway number, open your mind, see some different stuff.
That's right. Like, when you look at the queens that are just sort of doing that, like even with Pearl, for example. So Pearl was huge on her season, but Pearl, I don't know, in my opinion, kind of just calls it in, like, is pretty, so makes herself pretty, but then doesn't have that same drive to connect with the community, and doesn't have the same, I don't know, doesn't have the same pride in their work in that same way. Whereas you have somebody like Alaska, who is a fan of drag, completely lives her whole life, and whether the audience shows up or not is going to be getting so much from that performance.
See, that's, I think it's cool having you here today, because we're both the opposite. It's funny. We're very different in the fact you love the RuPaul's Drag Race and you've watched everything. I've never seen a single episode.
Oh.
I don't watch any of it. I would say I live it. I don't need to watch it.
Yeah.
But I also look at it. For me, my mission is very different as well. I'm performing to 300 people a night, mainly a straight audience. Yeah. Like when we always do a survey at the opening, how many gay people, how many lesbians, how many straight people, how many bi people. And our audience is literally 85 to 90% straight people. And I had a guy come up to me at the last show just a couple of weeks ago here. And he said to me, he said, I just wanted you to know I was at your first, at the opening of the tour this year. And he said, my friend sat beside me through the whole thing, kind of quiet. He's like, we're on the football team together. He said, and then when we got home, he said, I just want to let you know I'm gay.
Wow.
And he said, well, that's what the drag queens were there for. We had so much fun. They were so nice. And he's like, that one drag queen should come over. I had went over and sat on his lap and was teasing them. And he said, look, it's fine. She had a good time and she showed me that you guys are just open and there to have some fun. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I don't mind that you're gay. It's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I wonder. I'm trying to open the doors and change people's minds that, you know, yes, we're gay and yes, we're, you know, these flamboyant characters, but we're opening people's eyes to the community and that gay is not just one thing. Gay can be a football player. Gay can be a mechanic. Mm-hmm. Someone else had brought that up to me and was like, oh, well, you know, I always felt like such an outsider because to me, gay was being a drag queen, being flamboyant, being super feminine. He's like, but I like working on cars.
It just,
and I was still saying that, like, it's, that's
something that kind of blows my mind is how many people don't understand that everyone who identifies as gay is an outsider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not fitting the stereotype is the stereotype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, speaking of somebody who did not fit the stereotype is Jackie Shane. We're talking about a gender non-conforming black person yep. in 1950s Toronto from Nashville. And it was discovered recently.
So this was like literally before the term trans even existed.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to sound really stupid because I know nothing about her. Is she still alive?
Jackie Shane, as far as 2011, is apparently still alive living in Nashville as a woman. And I speak to this because we're just about out of time, but we're talking about a time when the language and how we discussed gender and gender performance was drag. Now we're more nuanced and we understand what trans is and so on and so forth. But, you know, and that's a conversation for another time. In fact, we might even get into that conversation next week when we talk about the history and progress of trans rights here in Canada with the amazing Amanda Ryan. But unfortunately, I think we've just about ran out of time. I want to thank Crystal, Karen, and Angus for joining us. Any closing remarks?
Come on out to the shows. Have some fun. Make sure you say hi.
I can always talk, so no. Goodbye.
And be sure to find a drag scene in the area where you are. There's some amazing Canadian talent, and we've highlighted just the tip of the iceberg of it here.
And as I said, Algonquin College, come out and see us the first Wednesday of every month. Hopefully, we're going to put the bug out there. Let us come to Carleton as well. We'd love to do Carleton University.
And if you're anywhere other than these two places, there's plenty of time. This is the major hit Any Other Way from Jackie Shane.
Come again, and you say that you're my friend, but I know why you're here. She wants to know how I feel. Tell her that I'm happy. Tell her that I'm gay. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. With a broken heart, but when you see my baby, here's what you say. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. better say goodbye. I think you'd better go right now, or you might see me cry. But when you see my baby, this is what you say. Tell her I wouldn't have been any other way.